Most of us have at least one thing we're passionate about, whether it's knitting or golf or cooking.
Well, for my guest this hour, it's gourds. Hi, I'm Cynthia Schuster, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for Garden Talk. Terry Schmidt is the founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, organizer of the Wisconsin Gourd Festival, and you might know her as the Gourd Girl. She not only loves growing gourds, but she also turns them into amazing works of art as well. And we're wondering, do you consider yourself a gourd girl or a gourd guy? Do you want to be one, and you're just not sure how to get started? Well, we're here to help at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Terry, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me again.
So glad to have you back. Well, first of all, what exactly is a gourd?
Well, a gourd is most easily described as a member of the same family that pumpkins are in. It's called cucurbita. And pumpkins, squash, your winter squash, zucchinis, cucumbers, all of those are in the same family. What sets gourds apart is that if you keep a squash for long enough, it's going to just turn into mush. And a gourd, when it's mature, turns into a hard wood-like product. And so while when they're very small, they are edible, we typically in our country don't eat them, but other cultures do. Most often they're not used for eating. They're saved and matured and then used in art and making musical instruments and for crafts and as vessels. And they've been used by cultures for millennia.
Do they, like squash, do they vine out when they grow? Does it take a lot of space to grow gourds?
It does. It takes a tremendous amount of space. And depending on the type of gourd that or type of gourd plant that you put in, you can trellis some. The loofah gourd trellises, in fact, needs to be trellised. Some of the other gourd plants trellis very nicely. Some gourds, if you let them trellis or grow up on a trellis, then the weight of the gourd itself will pull the gourd off of the plant, and so those don't trellis very well. But yeah, there's a book out by a guy called Charles Heiser. It's called The Gourd Book, and I believe it was in his book that there was a case documented where some gourd plants were carefully watched as they grew, and they grew to be like 175 feet long. So
wow,
yeah, they take up a whole lot of space.
So how much space should we plan for typically?
Well, I guess it depends again on the type of gourd that you grow. But in a normal home garden, you probably are going to want to give, I'm going to say, a 6-foot square around each hill. And that would give them plenty of room to branch out and room for you to go in and look at what's going on until they just get crazy. And then you just don't need to be in there anyway.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a step back. What are some of the most common types of gourds that people might be familiar with?
What most people call the birdhouse gourd is there is really not a thing called a birdhouse gourd. Nowadays, with plants being hybridized so much, there are seed companies that sell seeds that are labeled birdhouse gourds, but that really is just more like a shape that would be appropriate for a bird to live in, and it can be any number of shapes. Most commonly, what people look for is called a bottle gourd, where it's got kind of a round top and then a neck and then a round bottom, sort of looks in a way like a two-part snowman, if you will. Mm-hmm. And those are used a lot for craft and a lot for birdhouses, and birds love gourds. They would prefer a gourd over just about anything because gourds are insulated. They have a natural insulation, so they're cooler in the summer, warmer in the winter. So, yeah, that's probably the most common gourd.
And they grow naturally hollow, or do you have to do something to prepare them into birdhouses?
Yeah, it's just like a pumpkin. So it has seeds and fiber inside of it when it's growing. When it's mature on the vine and green, not dried yet, it's about 98% water, so they're very heavy. And then they take a long time to dry, 6 to 8 months to a year, depending on the weather and the size of the gourd. And so then if you're making a birdhouse, you would make your holes in it and do all the preparatory stuff. And then if the seeds are loose in it, you can empty the seeds out. As long as there's room for a bird to get in, then you don't have to worry about cleaning all this stuff out, because a bird will take out what it doesn't want and use what it wants. And but otherwise, if you're using it like to make a bowl or something like that, then yeah, you have to clean all this stuff out of the inside.
So are gourds hard to grow? How difficult is it to
It depends. It depends on where you are. We're close to as north as you want to get to do good gourds. And I actually should retract that, because there are places more north that do fine gourds. What you want to look for in a good gourd, though, is that it's got some kind of density and thickness to it. It doesn't have to be an inch thick, but it has to be dense enough to be hard. And, you know, so it's a long season vegetable. The shortest season for a gourd is 90 days. And those are usually the smaller ornamental gourds and the bottle gourds, the things that are used for smaller birdhouses. If you get into like the larger Martin gourds and snakes and long-handled dippers and those, then you're talking 110, 120 days. And luffas are 140 days and extremely hard to grow in Wisconsin. So ideally, you would probably want to grow in the south and southwest, where you have a longer growing season and more heat. They love heat.
Mm-hmm. So if we're thinking about getting ready to plant gourds, what should we start thinking about right about now?
First thing you want to think about is that you didn't think about it last year, because you really need to prepare your soil ahead of time. I mean, it's a good thing to prepare it ahead of time. Planning is key. So what we do typically is we will till up our area in the fall and plant winter rye, and that becomes our green manure. So that we don't have to use anything to amend the soil, or not much to amend the soil. And then in the spring, we mow that down and till it in, and give that a little bit of time to break down before we start to plant. So if you're thinking now that you want to have a garden, you want to make sure that you have enough space. Know what kind of gourds you're going to grow and how much space they're going to need, so that you do have enough space. Because a lot of times I will get questions from people about how to make them big, how to make the gourds big. And it's just like anything else. If you don't have enough room, you can't grow. That's just the way it works. So you want to make sure that you give them enough space and that you have a good, slightly acidic soil, that you can test your soil. I mean, out here, it seems like most of the soil is pretty much the same. And, it, you know, as long as you have good soil, I mean, they'll grow even in sand, but they like a slightly acid soil. And then you can start your seeds inside, or you can start them outside. It just depends on the type of gourd you grow.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then what do we think about as we're trying to decide what type of gourd to grow? What are some factors to consider?
Right. Well, you want to first check the growing season on the seed. So here in Wisconsin, we have a short enough season that you don't want to grow, giant Zucca gourds that even Arizona can barely muster up if you don't have the season for it. So you do have to consider the growing season. You have to consider what you want to do with them. You know, if you're growing to sell, if you're just growing to sell them, then you probably want to just choose a lot of different varieties and have stuff, period. But if you know that you're going to use them yourself, are you going to use them to make birdhouses? Then you can just do simple 90-day birdhouse gourds. Are you going to make musical instruments? Then there are different types of gourds that you want. If you're going to use them to eat, there are certain types of gourds that you want. If you're going to use them to put in soap, like loofahs, you know, then you have to be careful about getting it started and extending your season. And so you need to know what you want to do with them when you're deciding what you want to grow.
Mm-hmm. So when I plant, you say we have the option of direct seeds or plants. Can you talk about some of the gourds? Which ones would we want to put directly into the ground?
Okay. We actually put everything directly in the ground. And the reason we do that is because for us, and this isn't, this is on a large scale. We do this on a large scale. So for us, it just doesn't make sense to transplant or to even start thousands of plants indoors. Gourds don't particularly like to be transplanted. Mm-hmm. They don't like their roots to be upset. So if you're going to start them indoors, I mean, this is a good time to do it now. You're probably not going to plant for another 4 weeks or more. So you can start your seeds indoors. And the seeds that you would want to start indoors would be the larger ones. So when you buy, let's say you buy three types of gourds. You buy ornamental, like little eggs or little spoon gourds. Those are really small seeds, the size of a pumpkin seed, or smaller mm-hmm. even than a pumpkin seed. Those you don't have to start indoors. It's a 90-day plant. As long as the soil is warm, it's going to do fine. And then you get the middle-of-the-road gourds that are like the bottle gourds. Those start fine on their own. If you're north, I would say like, you know, the cutoff to me seems to be around Fond du Lac or Oshkosh, Appleton, that, and north of there. Or, yeah, if you're north, you want to extend your season a little bit. And so you can start your seeds indoors and then move them out. Now, if you're doing large gourds like giant martens or any of the larger seeds, then you know when you look at it, it looks like a giant shield. It's a very, very big gourd, maybe upwards of almost an inch in size. Those definitely need some help. If you don't start them indoors, then at least you want to soak them before you put them in the ground.
Well, we've had a long winter. How is that going to impact the time at which we'll put the seeds into the ground?
Well, being the forever optimist, I think it's going to be right around the corner. It's going to be 80 in no time at all. So I think in Wisconsin, typically most people would be planted by, I think Memorial Day is what they say here. Mm-hmm. I'm from California, so if I didn't have my tomatoes in by mid-March, I would be freaking out. So, you know, this is a whole different thing for me.
Yeah.
But I think no sooner than the 1st of May. And, I mean, we're actually pretty close to the 1st of May, so mm-hmm. it might take a little bit longer than that. And the things you want to look for is to make sure that the soil is warm. So gourds have to be placed where there's full sun. That's the ultimate thing. They mm-hmm. have to have full sun. They have to have water. They have to have heat. And if they don't have those three things, then you're not really going to get gourds, or you're not going to get decent gourds. So if you have a place that's full sun, ideally, if your soil was above 65 degrees when you plant, that's what you want. Your soil needs to be above 65 degrees. Mm-hmm. So that's one reason why all cucurbits, the recommendation is for all cucurbits to be planted on a hill. So you make these little mounds. And the reason for that is because the mound warms up faster in the morning. And so even though it gets cooler at night, it warms up faster in the morning. And so there's a more warmth time.
How high should the mound be?
Oh, I don't know. What is that?
That looks like about 15 inches,
is it?
I would say.
Really? Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
14, 15.
It's just however much the hoe makes.
Well, I'm Cynthia Schuster sitting in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest today is Terry Schmidt, the Gourd Girl and founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. She's here to take your questions this hour at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email talk@wpr.org. We'd also love to see your pictures on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. You can also post your questions there. I'm Cynthia Schuster. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Larry Mueller, and we're talking about gourds this hour with Terry Schmidt, founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society, organizer of the Wisconsin Gourd Festival that's coming up. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can also email your questions and comments at talk@wpr.org. And Terry, I don't want to get too far along without asking you first about the upcoming Gourd Festival.
Yay,
tell us about
it. Here it comes. It's almost here. It's always nice to have it here and then to have it gone. That's a lot of work. The festival's coming up this week from tomorrow, Saturday, April 13th. This is our fifth year at Olbrich Botanical Gardens, so it's a beautiful place to go for the gardens and get the festival at the same time.
In Madison, right?
In Madison on 3330 Atwood Avenue. There is no charge for the festival to come into the festival. Parking is free and the festival is free. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and goes until 4 or 5. I don't remember. I know we have to be out
4 o'clock.
4 o'clock.
Yep.
Okay. We have classes there. The classes that are open still for registration if anybody wants to register. We have a chip carving class from 9 to noon. And everything is provided in these classes, so you don't have to bring anything. You don't have to know anything. All levels are accepted. All levels of expertise. We have a woman teaching Southwestern masks. There is a really great basket maker coming in that is teaching how to do a pine needle rim on a gourd bowl, which is a very popular sort of way to edge a bowl. There's a class on a very whimsical class called Whimsies, where you take gourd shards and wire and beads, and you make these little wall hangings, sometimes people, sometimes animals. Mm-hmm. It's a real out-of-the-box kind of class. And then there's another class. It's full now, but it's really a great class called Ancient Vessels. And so it's a way of making a gourd that's been cut into a bowl look like a really old, old piece of art. Hmm. Then in addition to that, we have Wayne Otto doing a free demonstration on how to put designs on gourds. One of the hardest things about doing gourd art is that you're working with a canvas that is not flat. And Wayne is just the master of making everything perfectly symmetrical on his gourds. He does Southwestern art on his gourds or sort of American Indian type art on his gourds. And it's always very symmetrical and it's just incredible. So it's a free demonstration. That's at noon. And it's kind of first come, first serve. So anybody that wants to listen to Wayne talk about doing that, it's incredible. So then aside from the classes, we have a gourd art competition. So if you want to bring pieces in or mail pieces in, you can do that. And there's information on our website about that.
What's your website?
The WisconsinGourdSociety.org.
Okay.
Yeah. And so the competition actually intake is on Friday. Judging is Friday night. And so all the pieces and the ribbons and all that will be out on Saturday. There's some incredible gourd artists in the area. Incredible gourd artists. I mean, I just can't even say that enough. There are just some phenomenal ideas out there. So we have the gourd art competition vendors who will be selling their art. Some vendors who will be selling supplies for gourds, for gourd art. A great raffle and silent auction. So the silent auction usually contains pieces of art by the vendors.
Okay.
But the raffle often contains things like seeds and saws to cut the gourds with. There's, you know, it's a business in itself, the whole gourd industry.
I was going to ask about that.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, gourds don't look particularly easy to work with if you're going to make art out of them.
Yeah.
So at these workshops, are supplies provided there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All of the workshops, the instructors have everything there that the students need. But you're right. They're not easy to work with. And there are safety issues around gourds that you need to be careful of. You know, you should wear a mask if you're carving. And there are certain tools that are made just for gourds. Not that you couldn't use regular tools, but there are some tools that are handier to use on gourds. And yeah. Yeah. So, but besides the classes, we do have a great area for kids. And so the kids can plant a gourd, they can take a planted gourd seed home, and hopefully that'll germinate and they'll have a place, a garden area where they can put it. And then there's also a project for the children, and there's no fee for the kids' projects. And then we have music and just I can't think of anything else right now. But there's a lot.
Well,
there's
it sounds
tons
like
of
a
stuff.
Lot. That's a lot of work for you to put together.
A lot of stuff for a day.
Yeah. Well, we have some callers lining up, so we'll get to those next. And once again, the phone number is 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. If you have any questions, comments about growing gourds, harvesting gourds, and making some wonderful artistic creations with gourds. We're going to take a call right now from Paul in Ettrick. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm pretty darn good. I think I'm good enough.
Good.
All right.
I have two real quick questions. The first one, if I plant different varieties of gourds, how far apart do I have to plant the different varieties, or will they? I'm worried that they'll cross.
You know what? It doesn't matter if they cross unless you're going to use your seeds the following year.
I see.
Yeah, so the seed that you put in this year is going to create the gourd that's associated with that particular seed. And so if it does cross, it's only going to affect the seed in this year's gourd for next year.
I got it. Okay. And then if I mail an entry in for the show, can I use the same box to have it returned if I enclose the label and the postage?
Absolutely. We prefer that.
All right.
Yeah.
And then I have a picture of my entry on Larry's Facebook page.
Oh, right.
We saw that. I'll pull it up in the studio so that Terry can see it. But, yeah, thank you for submitting that, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we've got Joanne in Sturgeon Bay. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I love gourds. I like the weird, really weird ones.
Uh-huh.
But I was wondering how successful one could possibly be by growing the smaller ones on a trellis or some kind of a vine.
Are you talking about the small ones, like little eggs, the very, very small ones?
Well, yeah, or maybe even a little bit bigger.
Like
than
the
that.
Bottle gourds, like the birdhouse size?
Along with bushes. And, of course, that's quite a bit of support, but I just wondered if I could expect any luck with that.
On growing on a trellis, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's a vine, and they send out tendrils, and once they attach to something, they will not let go. So, if you have an old building that you want to cover, it's a great plant to put in front of an old building because it's a beautiful plant and it will vine up over just about anything.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome, Joanne.
Thanks, Joanne. We did get a question from Jan in Duluth. She wants to know, if I want to make a gourd birdhouse, can I just buy a gourd at the store, or do I have to go through any special process?
Okay, you can buy a gourd at the store as long as it's not a green gourd. So usually when we go to a store, I think of a store like a grocery store, mm-hmm. and we buy a gourd, it's typically in the fall. That's typically a gourd that is green, and that gourd may very well be fine in the after winter. If it's green, it hasn't dried out yet. So it has to be given time to dry out. And you don't know when you buy a green gourd if it's going to be, if it was mature when it was picked. So my recommendation would be to make sure that you're buying a dry gourd. If you're going to make, if you want to make a birdhouse, then you want to buy a dry gourd. So I don't know of any stores where you find dry gourds. I mean, maybe some craft stores have dried gourds that have been imported. A lot of times those ones are packaged. There might be three or four in a bag, and they have usually some kind of a dye on them. I don't know what that is. I don't know what the dye is or what makes it the color that it is. So ideally, if you're looking for a gourd for a birdhouse, you want to purchase it from a stand or a farmer where it's already been dried. And one thing that you can do for yourself is when you go to pick the gourd is kind of squeeze it. You know, make sure that it's a good hard gourd. And if you've kind of put it through the test, then you're safe to, you know, to make a birdhouse out of it, and you can feel good that it's going to last a while. When you make a birdhouse, it's such a simple process. You want to choose the size of the hole for the bird. Then you can find bird hole sizes online. If you just Google bird hole sizes, you can find a list of all the different sizes of holes because different birds require specific hole sizes. And so you put the hole on the gourd in the place where you want the bird to go in. you need three holes at the bottom of the gourd. So if water gets in, water can come out. Mm-hmm. And then you need some kind of a hanger at the top of the gourd.
How long will a birdhouse last?
It just depends. But really, we've had some on the farm that have lasted 12 years. So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, they'll last a long time.
So let's assume that we've successfully grown a gourd.
There's a
First
big
of all,
assumption.
What's the probability? Yeah.
That's a good question because we actually have, depending on the year, we can have as much as a 50% loss. So that's the number of gourds that don't mature, right? And that maturation time isn't just from the time that the gourd plant begins. That maturation time is from the time that the gourd begins, right? So you can have, I mean, our plants go in and start up in the very beginning of June. We don't even begin to get gourds on the plants until at least the first or second week of July.
Okay.
And then we hand pollinate our gourds to give them a leg up. If they're not hand pollinated, then you have to hope to have something come by and pollinate because there's no natural pollinator here. Mm. And so that, you know, the loss rate can be pretty high.
So, and actually let's go back to growing them too. So when it comes to weed control, I mean, how susceptible are they to, are they pretty resilient to nearby weeds?
They don't like weeds when they're little.
Okay.
Yeah, they don't like that. So it's a good idea, as with any plant, it's a good idea to keep the weeds down. The weeds are taking nutrients out of the soil, mm-hmm. you know. So it's a good idea to keep the weeds away from them. Once they get their leg up and they start to vine, nothing is safe around them. Mm-hmm. So they'll grow over. We have that velvet leaf. And that stuff grows, oh my gosh, it'll grow 6 feet tall and then it gets these big things on it. And they cover them. They cover the velvet leaf. Sometimes I'll put sunflowers in the garden around the edge of the garden and they'll just climb up to the top of the sunflowers and then from sunflower to sunflower to sunflower. So,
wow.
Yeah. So, but initially when you start out, you want to have a nice clean garden. And on our farm, once the gourds are planted and my husband plants them, probably the rows are 6 feet apart so that he can get his tractor through to keep the weeds, you know, away. And then in between, he has plenty of space I would guess in between hills, probably 2 feet, maybe three, so that he can get in between real easily until the plants get a leg up. And in that first month of growing there, you won't find a weed in our garden because he's just constantly mm-hmm. weeding. Yeah.
Full-time job.
It is. Actually, it's a labor-intensive vegetable. It's very labor-intensive. Yeah.
On the other hand, if we're not terribly successful in growing them, we shouldn't take it personally. It sounds like.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are numbers out there. Just, and I didn't bring the paperwork with me today, but I should have. If you're planting just for a garden, see if I can remember my numbers. On one hard shell gourd plant, so like a birdhouse gourd plant, you can expect 25 gourds. On one ornamental gourd, there we go. I wanted to say
right
cucurbita
there.
Pepo, yeah. And nobody knows what that is. On one ornamental gourd plant, you can expect 100 gourds per plant. That's on a small garden. Mm. When you're talking about acreage planting, you're talking about 5,000 an acre of hard shell gourds and about double that on a miniature gourds. Yeah.
Wow.
So out of those numbers, you should be able to come up with a couple.
That's pretty amazing. Well, I do want to get back to how to successfully harvest them at the end of the growing season. But we have a call from Diane in Milwaukee who actually wants to go back to something you mentioned. It was a passing statement, but I'm sure some other people have the same question on their minds. Diane in Milwaukee, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. You mentioned that you try to get your tomatoes in March, and I'm wondering how you do that in Wisconsin. Do you put a greenhouse over them, or what do you do?
No, I don't do that in March here. What I said was I'm from California, and in California, if I didn't have them in March, then I would panic. But I've learned not to kill my tomato plants. So,
well, when do you plant the gourds in the ground?
The gourds we'll put in, we'll have them in by May 1st.
Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. Yeah, we haven't mentioned, but you're not just the gourd girl. You have an all-out vegetable farm. Right?
We do. We have a large vegetable area.
Okay.
And it all started when my husband and I got married 8 years ago, and I asked him if he could give me a little spot for vegetables. And now, of course, being from California, a little spot was a little spot. And he gave me an acre. And so for the first 2 years, he tilled up an acre. And for the first 2 years, we had so many vegetables, we were giving it to the food bank and giving it to the food bank. And 1 year he said, how many people are you feeding? And I said, well, you gave me the space, you know, I had to plant. And so that's just grown and grown and grown. And so we do, we, of course, sell gourds at the Saturday market at the Dane County Farmers Market. And on Saturdays, typically, that's all my husband sells. But he religiously goes now to the Wednesday market on the downtown, mm-hmm. and also to the Greenway Station market on Thursdays. And so we sell tomatoes, which are, that's the big thing for me, is I love to grow different varieties of heirloom tomatoes. Everything we grow is heirloom. So we have heirloom tomatoes and peppers and kale on a pretty large basis now. We start out, of course, with radishes and lettuce early and peas early in the season. We get our beans in early. We grow hard beans and soft beans, mm-hmm. and all the squash and winter squash and summer squash and you name it. Every year it gets to be a little bit bigger and mm-hmm. yeah, so it's trial and error. I mean, we've only really been doing the vegetable thing on a semi-large scale for us for about the last 5 years. But we've been very successful with heirloom tomatoes and very successful with kale. So that's what people look for from him.
Great. Well, perhaps you are looking for some advice, not just on growing gourds, but getting your garden started. And our guest today on Garden Talk is Terry Schmidt. She's the Gourd Girl and founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email talk@WPR.org. We also have the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page up here in the studio if you'd like to post your pictures or your comments and questions there. We were talking about the growing season and how lengthy it can be for gourds. Mm-hmm. So, once again, presuming that we're successful in growing a good crop of gourds, when do we start to think about picking them?
Well, you need to make sure that the plant is done, truly done. Mm. So as long as the gourds are on the vine, and even if the vine looks like it's withered and it's seen its days, our general rule is to wait until we've gone through one hard frost, a truly hard frost. On the farm, we will often leave them until December, mid-December. It depends. We'll just leave them in the field until then. You can check and see if your gourds are mature and ready to pick by picking one and looking at the stem in the stem. If the stem has any green in it, it is not ready to be picked. It needs to be totally dried. As long as there's some green in the stem, that means that even though the vine looks like it's withered, that gourd is grabbing what's left of any nutrients mm-hmm. it can to help in the maturation process. So, yeah, so we will leave them, and you can leave your gourds out all winter. You don't have to bring them into an area to dry. You can leave them outdoors.
And how long should we do that once again? How long is the drying time? And
it depends on the size of the gourd, mm-hmm. But typically from fall, November, December, when they're mature, we wouldn't do anything with them until probably April. So a good 6 months, maybe longer. On the bigger gourds, it takes longer. Depends on the winter too. Mm-hmm. If we have an extremely dry winter, then the gourds are going to dry out a little bit faster. If we have a super super wet winter, they might not grow. They might not dry as quickly.
Okay. Well, we have some more callers on the line. Let's talk to Keith in Ontario. Hi, Keith.
Good morning. I have a small farm. I do vegetables and raw milk, and I'm interested in putting beans and squash, gourds, that type of thing, together with field corn, sweet corn for a small flock of chickens and cows. I mostly do grass-based, but how far apart should I put the hills, and what kind of density could I do within the hill as far as mixing the corn with the cucurbits, the squash, gourd, that type of thing?
Okay, so I would probably... I would probably not mix it with gourds. I wouldn't have a problem with squash. Of course, squash and beans and corn go together as the three sisters, and so it's great to plant those together. But I don't know that I would do the gourds, because if the gourds start to vine up your corn and the gourds are heavy, they'll just pull your corn down. So that's the problem with putting gourds. It's not... Even though squash is all sort of one family, gourds really are a member in itself. So I wouldn't put that together. And then when I have done the three sisters, I plant my corn tremendously close. So I don't know how you do your corn, but and I don't do corn on a large scale, but I put my corn probably, oh my gosh, how far is this? 6 inches apart. My seeds 6 inches apart. And then in between each corn plant, I put my bean plants in between every single corn. And then I might put my cucurbit, my squash, about every 10 corn plants, or maybe 15 corn plants. So whatever that comes out to be, 56. So maybe every 4 feet, 5 feet, I would put a squash plant.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for your call, Keith. Let's take a break, and then we'll get back to more calls. You are listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Larry Mueller, and our guest this hour is Terry Schmidt. She's the Gourd Girl and founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, and our email address is talk@wpr.org. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Larry Mueller, and we're talking about gourds and more this hour on Garden Talk. Terry Schmidt is our guest. She's the founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. She's the Gourd Girl and organizer of the annual Wisconsin Gourd Festival. You can call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Let's head back to the phones. We'll take a call from Jody in Waukesha.
Hi. I have a question about how you clean out the inside of the gourds when you're ready to do something with them. I grew a lovely crop a couple years ago, dried them out, scrubbed the outside, and then I was going to have the grandkids do a project, and boy, it's a lot of work to get them cleaned out. I don't know if there's an easy way to do this.
Yeah, that's a great question. Depending on the gourd, we have two kinds of the insides of the gourd grows sort of in two different ways. If you pick up a gourd and it shakes and everything really shakes so that you can tell the seeds are loose, that's really, if you're going to cut into a gourd, that's the one you want. If you pick up a gourd and you shake it and nothing happens, that means that it could mean a couple of things. Well, it means that all the seeds dried in the pulp. And that can mean that pulp is hard against the side on the inside of the gourd. And that those ones are very, very difficult to clean. So first, if you're going to cut the gourd, if you shake it and hear the seeds rattle, that's probably going to be a lot easier for you to clean. Now, if you're growing your own gourds, you don't really have a choice. Some of them they all dry differently. So when you have a gourd that is really hard to clean, there are a couple of things. If you've already made your cut in it, you can kind of scoop out as much of the fiber, seed and fiber, as you can. You do want to wear a mask when you do that, because that fiber carries, some people have an allergic reaction to the stuff that's inside the gourd, so you should wear a mask when you do this. Scoop out as much as you can, and if you can't get everything out, there are a couple of things you can do. If you're handy with power tools, you can put a wire brush on a drill and then just wire brush the inside of the gourd along the sides on the inside, and that'll clean up real nicely. And if you're not handy with power tools, you can put water in the gourd and let it get wet, and then you can like maybe soak it for an hour or something, and then just use a scoop, a spoon of some kind, and you can scoop it out, then let it dry. And the roughness on the inside of the gourd, you can finish that off with just like a 60 grit sandpaper.
What about the birdhouse then? Do you need to clean that out when you make your hole?
No, we don't. We cut our hole, and as long as it's not packed full, some gourds, when you drill the hole, it's like, it's almost like it's filled with styrofoam.
Uh-huh.
And if that's what you're dealing with, then for a birdhouse, you do need to get that, at least a good deal of that out. And we'll use like the end of an old spoon or a wooden spoon, you know, anything, a screwdriver, anything that's handy that you can poke in there and kind of get most of it out. And then as long as the birds can get in there, then they'll start pecking on it and
okay.
get it out. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Thanks, Jody. We'll go next to Appleton, and Deanna is waiting for us. Hi, Deanna.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I kind of came in the middle of the program, so you may have covered this already, but I was surprised to hear that you start to pick them around December, because I have always thought gourds as a centerpiece for fall around Halloween, and I'm just wondering now, when you do that, then what are you doing with the gourds all winter? Are you using them for some other purpose other than centerpieces?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, our gourds, we dry our gourds. And so they are just drying all winter. They're sitting in a pile and drying. The ones that you see in centerpieces in the fall have been picked early. So it's not that it's a bad gourd. It's just that it's not likely a mature gourd. So if you wanted to keep those centerpiece gourds, first of all, you won't keep the color. The color will definitely go away after a few months. But the gourd itself is pretty likely going to rot. So you can absolutely pick them in the fall, and we do some for for the fall season, so that we sell as like the miniatures and the ornamentals. We pick those in the fall, and we pick them for the color, and people use them on their tables or whatever. But those ones won't necessarily dry into something that you could use for art or a birdhouse or something like that, yeah.
Oh, I see. And then my other question would be, because you touched on selling them in a farmer's market, what do they normally sell for?
It depends on the gourd. Now, if you're talking about those little centerpiece gourds, like miniature eggs and spoons and those, typically you'll be able to find those for, I'm going to say between $2 and $4 for a dollar. But if you're talking about the larger gourds, if it's green and it's the fall time, the larger gourds are probably going to be the green ones. I don't know, maybe $3 a piece or something, or $5 a piece. When you talk about dried gourds, then there's sort of two varieties of dried gourds. There's the dirty dried gourd and there's the clean dried gourd. So some farmers will sell their dried brown gourds from last year without cleaning them. They're dirty gourds. There's nothing wrong with a dirty gourd, except that you don't know if it's really hard until it's been cleaned. And so those ones will be less expensive than a hard shell, cleaned hard shell gourd. And for us, we only sell cleaned hard shell gourds, and that way you're guaranteed that you have a hard gourd.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was
You're
very
welcome.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Deanna. Well, clearly we've heard just in that conversation alone how versatile gourds can be. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the artistic creativity that even you've put to work. And there's a new book out or coming out soon that features some of this art. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually out. I think it came out last April, I think.
Okay.
Or it might have been December. I don't know. I don't remember.
Well, but it's available.
But it's, yes, it's called New and Different Materials for Weaving and Coiling, and it's authored by a woman named Marianne Barnes, who is an incredible weaver. But she took up gourds a while back, and then she realized that aside from just using normal weaving material like reed, she was seeing a lot of gourd artists who were using other things. And so this book is not about Marianne Barnes and gourds. It's about all of us who do gourds and what different things we use. And I am one of the featured artists in the book. And so it covers the gamut of things that can be used, from regular weaving materials like reeds to make baskets or woven gourd reed baskets, right? To other materials like, for instance, on our farm, we have a lot of black walnut trees. And in the fall, when the leaves fall from the black walnuts, they fall and are usually attached to what's called a petiole. And so it's just a long stem. Well, when I first started learning to do gourds, one of my earliest classes, the earliest classes that I took was weaving pine needles. And it's just so hard to weave pine needles. It's just incredibly difficult. And I didn't like it. I didn't like it. It was too hard for me. And it was too precise. Mm-hmm. And so I was walking the driveway one day and I saw these walnut petioles and I thought, huh, I wonder what these are. And it looks kind of like a pine needle in a way, a little bit thicker. It's got way more texture. And so I started picking them up and using those on when I would do rims on my gourds. To this day, I really don't know anyone else that uses walnut petioles unless they've taken my classes. Mm. So we can use walnut petioles. When I was in Arizona several years ago, I found a thing in the desert. It's called a devil's claw. And I brought it home and just on a whimsy, I kind of tore it apart and found seeds in the pod. And I grew them here. And they just grew tremendously huge, way bigger than they would grow in Arizona. And I started to use those on gourds. And so you can use, I mean, you can use anything. You can use daylily, the leaves from daylilies or those ditch lilies that grow crazy everywhere. You can dry those and you can weave with those. And you know, people weave with just chair caning material. And you know, so from a weaving standpoint, you can, you know, use just about anything that'll bend, you can use it on a gourd. And then there are, aside from weaving, there are so many other facets of art that can be incorporated in gourds. Of course, we see a lot of masks. People use gourds for masks. A tremendous amount of carving. There's some, and if you go to the festival this next weekend, you'll see Gary Qualheim is one of our artists, and his mother was a rose mauler. Just a fantastic rose muller. And he always says that rose mulling is in his DNA, because when you look at his carving on gourds, he's just an incredible, beautiful rose molly-ish. It's not like he carves rose mulling, but mm-hmm. his carving is just so smooth and ornate. It's just gorgeous. So there are some great carvers out there. A lot of wood carvers have taken up doing gourds. And then, of course, making musical instruments. There's a tremendous lot of musical instruments out there. So
wow. And we'll see some of these perhaps at the next Gourd Festival.
You will. You'll see them.
So remind us in the last couple of minutes here when that's taking place and
okay, it's
what's new.
A week from tomorrow, Saturday, April 13th at Albrook Botanical Gardens and 3330 Atwood Avenue in Madison from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And I just mentioned musical instruments. And one thing that I did want to say is that we have two gentlemen. One is from Mali and one is from Ghana. And they one plays drums and the other plays an instrument called the Ingoni. And it's made out of a gourd. And they're
really
just incredible musicians. Yeah. So they're usually there from like 11 till 1. And they'll be playing music and they'll have gourd instruments there.
Nice. Yeah. Is that a percussion instrument? Or?
Yeah. It's kind of like a guitar, except that instead of holding it like a guitar, you hold it facing you. It's kind of a hard, hard concept to understand. But it's, yeah.
That's fascinating.
It's a very, very cool sounding instrument. Yeah. And actually the guy that that plays, his name is Tani Jakite, and he actually teaches how to make ingonis.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's something to look forward to at the next Wisconsin Gourd Festival coming up. You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Terry Schmidt has been our guest this hour. She's also known as the Gourd Girl and founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. I'm Cynthia Schuster, filling in for Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson produced this program, and Gabrielle Pedriani is our on-air producer. You want to stay tuned. There's much more ahead on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned. There are few plants that have more variety than gourds, and in the hands of artists, they turn into amazing pieces of art as well. Hi, I'm Cynthia Schuster, sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Terry Schmidt is such a fan of gourds that she calls herself the Gourd Girl, and she's the founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. We're happy to have her with us today. If you have any questions for her, the number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email address is talk@wpr.org. Terry, thanks for being with us today.
It's good to be here.
Well, we were talking earlier about the Wisconsin Gourd Festival and some of the ways in which we can make music with gourds.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. So they're not, you know, we're thinking of percussion instruments, maybe mm-hmm. some maracas or, mm-hmm. but we can make stringed instruments, too.
We can make stringed instruments. I want to go back for a second. You said maybe maracas. And actually, I was just recently reading something, and it said that it's thought that the earliest instrument ever in history was made from a gourd as a rattle. And it wouldn't have been made from the gourds that we know as gourds, a vine gourd. But there's also a tree called a calabash tree. And that is pretty much unique to the Americas, Mexico and South America. And I guess they have found them where they have hollowed out the fruit from the calabash tree, which is very much like a gourd. Mm. And then they put beans in it and add a little handle and make shakers. So yes, but also stringed instruments. The one that you'll see at the Gourd Festival is the ingoni, which will be played by Tani Jakite. He also makes ingonis and he teaches how to make ingonis. There's also gourd stringed instruments. There's like a gourd harp that you can make. The original banjos were made from gourds. And
really?
In fact, the word banjo comes from the word banjar, which is an African word for that instrument that was made so many years ago. And, of course, it came to America via the slave trade. And that's how banjos got here and were made from gourds for years and years until Some company picked that up and started making it out of steel and a head. But so there's tons of stringed instruments.
Well, over the news break, one of our staff members here, Rachel Owens, found some audio of an ingoni. So mm-hmm. I thought we might let our listeners enjoy a little bit of that so they can get a taste for what an ingoni is. What kind of string is being used?
I don't know on that one, but I'm going to guess it's just a metal string like what would be used on a guitar.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we have the advantage here of being able to look at this. But what we're seeing is a gentleman who is holding this gourd That is, think of a large round gourd that's been cut in half. So he's like has a half of a gourd, and there's a neck sticking out of it, just like one would with a banjo or a guitar. But instead of holding it like a guitar, he's actually got the gourd in his lap with the neck sticking up in the air, and he holds on to it by holding on to what would be the fingerboard on a guitar, and then he uses his fingers to pluck the strings. It's amazing to watch them play, especially the people who have mastered it, because their hands just go like tremendously fast.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we have some more callers lining up, and if you'd like to join them and ask a question of the Gourd Girl, our number is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email talk at WPR.org. We're going to go next to Lynn in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Lynn.
Hi. Thanks so much for letting me talk with you. I'm wondering if you can identify an easy way to cut the bird holes in the hard gourds. Mm. I've tried to do that in the past and have shattered the gourd.
Mm, what were you using?
An electric drill with a round router attached.
Oh, okay. I would recommend a hole drill bit. So a router bit, I think, has like a middle thing that goes in the gourd and then it goes down and then the actual cutting part hits the gourd and then kind of just chews it up until right. So what we use is what's called a hole drill. And so it's round and you buy them in the size that you want the hole to be.
Okay.
And so the hole, the actual size of the hole of the drill bit has little teeth on it, so that whole thing goes against the gourd, so it's less likely to shatter it.
And is it important to have the drainage holes in prior to that so that there's a little bit of less pressure inside the gourd, or doesn't it make any difference?
Doesn't matter. No, okay. That doesn't matter.
And do you just use an awl or something to poke the holes in the bottom for the drainage?
Sure, you can, or you can just use a regular drill bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay, Lynn, thanks.
Thank you, Lynn. We'll go next to Dennis. He's been waiting in Berlin.
Hi. Earlier you had mentioned about an heirloom tomato, and mm-hmm. I'm not very knowledgeable about gardening. What is an heirloom tomato?
Well, an heirloom tomato is one that has not been crossed with anything, that has not been hybridized. So most heirloom tomatoes come to us from either other countries or from this country from a long time ago. So these are seeds that have been saved from year to year to year where they have not been hybridized or crossed with another tomato. Typically, if you buy a tomato plant in like a big box store, these are going to be not going to be heirloom tomatoes, usually a hybridized tomato. And the reason that tomatoes are hybridized is because companies do that so that they can get tomatoes that are more uniform and they, you know, grow under certain growing conditions that might be different than what an heirloom would accept. So when you have heirloom tomatoes, you're going to have cracks in the top. They're not perfect. They get what they call, I think they call it cat face, where the top of it just gets these lines. And some people call them ugly tomatoes, but they actually have the best flavor of all tomatoes.
Okay, that was my next question. Do they taste better?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely better. I don't know how far back you go, but I remember as a kid tomatoes tasting a lot different than tomatoes that you get in the market. And
yeah.
So this is like the old taste of tomatoes.
All right. I will try them.
Thanks. Good luck.
Thanks, Dennis. Deborah writes on our Facebook page, what is the best way to clean a dried gourd? I grew some bottled gourds and have stored them for a few years now and would like to know the best method for cleaning the surface.
Great. This is a really good question because it's important to do it the right way from a safety standpoint. So what is on the outside of a gourd when it dries is mold. And so you want to make sure that that you protect yourself from that mold. So you should wear a mask. You should always clean your gourd wet. So I have known people come to me and say, well, I sanded my gourd down on the outside and I still can't get the stuff off. Well, when you're sanding that, you're putting all that mold back up in the air and you're probably mm-hmm. breathing some of it in. It's just not good for you. So a very good way to do it is to soak it in a tub of some sort of water. Now, gourds are buoyant, very buoyant. In fact, in Mexico, they strap them onto the kids' arms as their swimmy wings. They do. That's how they teach kids to swim. So anyway, you can put them in a bucket or a big container, and you would put the dry gourds in there. What we do is we use large garbage cans. We'll put them in the garbage can. We cover it with a board, and then we put a very heavy rock on top of the board so that the board doesn't move. And then we put the water in, because if you put the water in first, you'll never get the gourds down. Mm-hmm. So you got to put the gourds in first, cover it up, make sure that the cover is solid on there, and then put water in. We dump a little bit of bleach in. It doesn't have to be a big amount of bleach, just enough to help keep the mold from coming back. And then we soak them for 24 hours. And then we can take them out, and then you should be able to use a simple, like a chore boy kind of scrubbing pad to get that mold off. And it's pretty easy if you soak them like that.
Great. I'm Cynthia Schuster in for Larry Mueller, and this is Garden Talk on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest is Terry Schmidt. She is the Gourd Girl. She is the founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society and organizer of the upcoming Wisconsin Gourd Festival. We still have a few moments to take some more calls if you'd like to join us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Well, Terry, I'm wondering, what do you consider when you choose seeds?
Well, the first thing we think about is the growing season. We need to make sure that whatever we pick is going to work in our growing season. And for us, we can extend the growing season by either starting them indoors and then getting them out early and covering them up so that the soil stays warm where they are, and then covering them up again in the fall. But most people don't do that. So you do want to consider your growing season first and foremost. You need to consider the size of your garden, how much room you've got, and what type of gourd you're going to put in. And you need to consider if it has to be trellised or not. So if you want to grow luffas, which is a very hard one to grow because it's a 140-day plant, it has to be trellised. Anything else can grow as a vine or a trellis, but sometimes some gourds are better trellised than others.
Mm. How did you get into gourds?
I met my husband. I had just moved here, and he was at the farmer's market, and I did not know what a gourd was. And I saw his stand and wondered what it was, and he shook it. And I'm actually a musician, and I heard that noise, and I thought, wow, I could write music for that. And that's what got me started. I met him, and a couple years later, he's been growing gourds for 20 years, and he's been at the market for that long. And so a couple years later, we were married, and it's just gone on since then. Within probably a year after we got married, I started the Gourd Society, and that was really at his request and the request of one of our longest-standing members, Marge Engelman, who had said, you know, Wisconsin needs a gourd society. And so now we have one.
Yeah. So is he the gourd guy?
He is the gourd guy. Nice. That's how I got the name, because he's okay. The gourd guy. So I became the gourd girl after he was the gourd guy.
Well, Mitch in Shorewood is waiting to join us. Hi, Mitch.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I'm actually a folk musician, and we've made numerous instruments out of gourds. And one problem we always run into is, while they're drying out, they tend to get moldy or other such problems. Do you have any recommendations how to solve that?
Yeah, there's no solution to them getting moldy when they're drying out, because they're supposed to. The thing with gourds is that when you pick a gourd, it's 98% water, and it has a skin on it. And that water has to come out somehow. So it actually sort of gets stuck between the inside of the gourd and the skin as the water starts to dissipate over time. And that because it's wet under that skin all the time, it gets that mold naturally. Just think of it, if you were wet all the time, you'd probably get moldy too. So the idea is that if you just leave that gourd alone for 6 or 8 months, that it's going to dry. And once the gourd is light, it's very light in weight and it's dried already, then you want to take that mold off the gourd. But you're not going to avoid getting mold on the gourd when it dries.
Yeah, that's what we found. And I have found in the paint field that I've done slacking on them after they've dried, and then they get a nice finish.
Right.
Like with Gian Shakers or Maracas.
Right. There is actually, now that I'm thinking, there is one other thing that you can do to prevent the mold, and it's a longer process. But when you pick the gourd, if you wait about 3 weeks after you pick it, you can actually scrape the skin off. It's called green scraping. And you can very lightly, like using a butter knife, you don't want to cut into the gourd, but you just very lightly scrape that skin off, and then you wipe it down, and you would have to like wipe it down about once a week because it'll get kind of sticky, but it makes it dry a lot faster. It would be a large gourd would be dried like within a month if you take the skin off, and then it doesn't mold.
One other thing that I did that did work, we would coat them with like an anti algae or growth chemical or something like that to help solve that problem. And that worked a little bit, but like you said, yeah, there's that water layer between the skins and it's hard to solve that problem.
Right.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mitch.
Thanks, Mitch. Next we go to John in Cedarburg.
Yes, hi. This is a bit off the wall, but I've always wondered, where does the expression come from when you say that somebody is out of their gourd?
Do you know?
I don't. I really...
Too. Or bored out of their gourd.
I really don't know. Sorry, John.
That's okay. Well, Caroline from North Prairie is on the line, and she might have some advice for Mitch. Hi, Caroline.
Hi. About 50 years ago, there was an article that suggested drilling holes in the bottoms of the gourds. And they drip, 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 and you do not get the mold on the outside shell.
Mm-hmm.
It is messy. You need to drip them on an area where, you know, it's not going to spoil anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it really works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you can do that. The concern with putting a hole in the gourd before it is before it's actually dried and matured is bringing bacteria into it. And there are times when a gourd can take a cut or a hole, and then the bacteria that enters it causes the gourd to start to just wrinkle. It just wrinkles a lot. And so there is a little concern with that. And then, of course, also, depending on what you're going to do with the gourd, if you're just going to use it to make a birdhouse, then that would probably be okay. But if you're going to use it to make a piece of art, then you have a hole in the gourd. And so that can create a problem. Yeah.
At the start of the show, we were talking about the multitude of uses for gourds. And one thing you said is that in our country, we don't typically eat gourds, but others do. Can you talk about where in the world gourds are used as food and how so?
Sure. In fact, the first time that I found out that gourds were used as food was, I'm going to say it was about 2006, maybe. I went to Taiwan with a friend who was from Taiwan, and one evening, she and her family wanted to take me out to dinner, and she wanted to make sure that I got to eat gourd. And there's a dish that they served there that was typically saved for royalty, and it was just like really a squash dish with a light sauce. I would have to say it was pretty uninspiring, but I did get to eat it, and it is very common in Asian food. And typically, they will eat bitter gourd is very popular in Asian food. In Indian food, we've actually had Indian people come to us at the farmers market when we have snake gourds, which is a very long gourd. It can grow up to 5-6 feet long. And we've actually had people say, "Why are you wasting that?" Because we let it dry, and it's not edible once it gets that dry. But the The gourd that is eaten most often in Indian food is called a trichosanthes. So it's not really a member of the Lagenaria hard shell gourd family. It's a different, but it's sort of related in that it grows essentially the same way. And trichosanthes grows very, very long, 6, 7, 8 feet long. I think I even have one that's longer than that, and very, very thin. And that's cut up and used very often in Indian food. So yeah, there and then the seeds. We had a mother and son who were from Africa that came to our stand one year, and the woman, the mother, was telling her son that she remembered as a child that in Africa they would take these gourd seeds and roast them, and then the women in the group would shell them. And so think of like a sunflower seed, how much work it is to shell a sunflower seed. This is what they would do. They would shell these roasted seeds and then pound them into a pulp and put them in a pie. And so, yeah.
What's the taste and texture like?
I don't know. I've never eaten one.
Oh.
No.
Hmm.
Don't eat them.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left. Mm-hmm. I wanted to mention one more time the upcoming Wisconsin Gourd Festival. And you say there's a lot for kids to do, too.
There is a lot for kids to do. We have a little area in the atrium at Olbrich Gardens, and there is the alphabet in gourds. So from A to Z, everything, okay. Every named, because gourds have names. There's an apple gourd, and, mm-hmm. you know, so they're every letter of the alphabet has a gourd from apple to zucca. And then the kids will be able to plant gourd seeds. And then there is a project that I don't really know what it is yet, but I know the person that's heading up the kids area, it's going to be making something with gourds. And so every year they come up with something different. So, yeah, we got that going on.
Nice. If we want to get gourd seeds.
Gourd seeds, we will have Livingston Seed Company donates seeds to us every year for the festival. Thank you, Livingston. And so, yeah, there will be seeds available. I'm not sure if anybody's going to bring plants. Sometimes they do. Some vendors do. Sometimes they don't. We just never know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if one wanted to get involved in the Wisconsin Gourd Society, where would they get started and what's involved in membership?
Okay, so it's $12 a year for membership. You can find the membership information online at wisconsingourdsociety.org. You can always email me, thegourdgirl@thegourdgirl.com. And I've got all the information on membership. For membership, what you get is a quarterly newsletter with tips and techniques and projects and things like that. Classes. We have classes going on year round. And so as a member, you get a discount on classes. And then if you want to be involved, we can always use help. It's a volunteer organization. So we're always looking for people to come to the festival and help out and join us and have fun.
Great. Well, Terry, thank you so much for being with us today.
It was great. Thank you.
Our guest has been Terry Schmidt, the Gourd Girl and founder of the Wisconsin Gourd Society. She's the organizer of the annual Wisconsin Gourd Festival. I want to thank Judith Sears-Poisson for producing this program and to Gabrielle Pedriani for her on-air production skills. Stay tuned for Chapter a Day coming up next. I'm Cynthia Schuster filling in for Larry Mueller, and this has been Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.